You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. I am Michael Brooks, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, political strategist and writer Bridget Todd joins us. We're going to be recapping the Democratic debate, which took place Sunday night. You probably had almost anything better to do than watch that debate with the DNC's amazing scheduling abilities. Although, I think about 10 million people or so actually did watch that debate, and the differences, the distinctions between Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders are getting starker and starker, and the reality that Martin O'Malley is still actually standing there is getting starker and starker. I think if the dude from The Wire that Martin O'Malley is supposedly based on ran, he would do a lot better. He'd probably throw some better shots. But not to kick a man while he's down, but I really don't think he belongs up there, to be honest with you. Governor of Michigan, acknowledging that the crisis in Flint, Rick Snyder saying it could be his Katrina. It's even worse, frankly, because Katrina exposed corruption, racism, lack of preparedness, but it was a natural disaster. This exposes corruption, racism, lack of preparedness, and it was essentially inadvertently planned. Why is he not acknowledging these mistakes in his resignation speech? Anyway, the Supreme Court is going to take up the Obama administration's immigration decision. We'll see how that comes down. That order has not had good luck in the courts so far. That will be an important case, obviously, for a lot of people in the future of immigration reform and humane policy and the secret conspiracy of small El Salvadoran families that secretly run this country, according to some people. Also, get to in the second half, hostages released from Iran. President Obama continues to quietly take care of business while everybody else is freaking out. And the U.S. ambassador to Israel essentially calls Israel an apartheid state. So a lot to get to. Donald Trump, obviously still out doing his thing. Ted Cruz, still out doing his thing. We have a grandiose narcissist and a sociopath as the two main candidates in the Republican Party. And then a sort of lightweight knockoff narcissist in Rubio. And then we just have Jeb, who... Do I feel bad for Jeb yet? No, I don't. I just enjoy mocking him. So I hope Jeb overperforms in Iowa so he gets like a 9-10% so he can keep going for another couple weeks. Like, I already miss Lindsey Graham. I miss saying, we're all going to die. And I will miss Jeb. Before we get to our next item of business and then to the great Bridget Todd, how are you guys doing? Matt, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I watched Selma for the first time yesterday.
Selma. Actually. Remember that's what Rush Limbaugh said to mock it? He was like, Selma.
Wait, what? Just as in a weird voice?
He said it in a weird voice like that to mock. I think that was his impersonation of, like, you know, Southern civil rights talk.
Well, he's a satirical genius.
He's a satirical genius, exactly. And Kelly. Kelly, mother effing, Kerry is back. How are you feeling? Are you recovering?
I'm still recovering, yes. Everyone get a flu shot. If you don't, you are just as stupid as I am.
Well, I don't have a flu shot, but I don't get the flu because I have a strong immune system. I hate to tell you.
You don't.
I prefer people with strong immune systems. Yeah, sorry.
You don't take the subway as often as I do. Maybe.
Yeah. No,
I
take
weak.
The subway.
I'm weak. Yeah. I'm a weak person.
I think you, if you don't negotiate from a position of strength, then the flu gets you.
You'll get crushed by the flu every time.
You'll get crushed by the flu every time. Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring but not sure where to find the best candidates? Candidates like myself, Kelly, or Matt? As a business owner or as a consigliere to a business owner, I can tell you that a company is only as good as the people that you hire. I can also tell you that posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. That's absolutely true, especially in today's world. Today's world relies on really sort of the most streamlined and efficient approaches to everything. And you got to have it in all the channels available. But when you're short-staffed, you have no time to fiddle around and deal with a dozen different job sites. Until now, thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, you can post 100-plus jobs, post to 100-plus job sites with just a single click. Imagine how easy that is. And be instantly matched to candidates from over 6 million resumes. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free. Getting the right people for your company is so important. Try ZipRecruiter and get the perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And third, because as Bill Clinton said, you always got to say it three times, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Find great candidates today. We will be right back with Bridget Todd on The Majority Report.
Rockstone was my pillar, could not find place for sleep. But them empty, we have to find food for it. Every day we terrorized by soldier and police. When they think them a strong man, they think them a bait. From them a play cowboy and Indian and chief. From the first to the third, straight up the seventh street. One thing in our way, mine have to jump with the base. I make it in a life, I inherit that to me. Them pay off, self-employed, cannot get laid off. Can't even get a day off. Who do want to stop me? No, them fine don't say them way off. All right. Tommy say one by one, one by one. One by one, we stepping out of Babylon. And then one by one, one by one. Hill King Selassie, I the conquering lion, lion, lion.
Rockstar,
like a luncheon. Steve Raga, Mali.
Help us now, take us from the slum. Never give up, but I want to clip on your bun. Hell, Rasta, take us from the slum. Never give up, but I want to kiss the last sea. I'm blessed. Separation is a thing, could be no harder time. Got to widen your views, got to broaden your mind. What we find, sin, they can't know where it's going to find. Hunger, poverty, a system so unkind.
Welcome back. This is The Majority Report. That was Stephen Marley. The song is Rockstone. For people who are tweeting at me, I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Bridget Todd. She is a political strategist and writer. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bridget, you were the first person I had in mind to talk to as I saw this past Democratic debate. I didn't watch it on Sunday. There were other things to do, so I had to YouTube it the next day, which I'm sure a lot of people did. I suspect maybe even you did. I'm not pointing any fingers. Yeah, these things are not scheduled well. And, you know, we've talked about this so many times, but I think the point sort of does bear repeating again, and I want your thoughts on this, that there is a basic macro contrast here. There's a lot of differences between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. There's some very different arguments about the nature of politics, the nature of change that we'll get into, and policy differences. But every time you watch a Republican debate, you have like, it's almost like you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out what like the, you know, like what the psychological disturbance, like what, like, okay, is Trump a narcissist or a sociopath? Ted Cruz is definitely a sociopath. Okay, like that's what you're doing with the debate. These debates are actual policy debates, and the Democratic Party has hurt itself, in my view, by not highlighting just the basic qualitative distinction.
I totally agree, right? You know, when you settle in to watch a Republican debate, you know you're in for some kind of like clown car of crazy, like you don't know what someone's going to say, what like crazy gaffe they're going to make. And when you watch the Democratic debate, it's just very different. And I wish that we lived in a world where the kind of questions that they ask of like Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, they're also asking to Trump and, you know, Bush. I would love to see the kind of questions that they get asked at Republican debates. But you're right. I mean, there's definitely no one that's highlighting this like very, very big ideological kind of difference between the two parties. And you definitely see that playing out through the debate.
Actually, go to that for a second. Isn't it amazing? There has been no real questioning. Maybe there's been one question, on climate change, on global warming in Republican debates. They pretty much cue them up for like ISIS and Obama, worse than ISIS and better than Iran, or worse than both.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like climate change is going to kill us all or anything. It's not like it's a big spread. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it really does come down to like who hates Obama the most and who can like whip up people into a frenzy, like a fear-mongering frenzy about Iran and ISIS. It's like, there's no sort of like substance. It's not like fear mongering or hate mongering or like putting down Obama. It's like they're only sort of like go to card at this point.
Right. So that's what's happening on the Republican side. I think what's happening that's really interesting on the Democratic side, and we have some sound which we're going to play in a minute to sort of set this up. But what's really kind of emerging in this race right now is, and I actually have a problem with this framing, which we'll get to in a minute. But, you know, this sort of basic notion that the goals and the outcomes that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders both desire are not terribly different, but there's radical different orientations in how we get there. I think it's more complicated than that. But this exchange on healthcare, we'll play the whole thing. It's a couple of minutes, but I want to digest it and get your thoughts on it. But I think that this, in some ways, is kind of the distillation of the distinction. So let's go. This is number one, I think.
Secretary Clinton, Senator Sanders favors what he calls Medicare for all. Now, you've said that what he is proposing would tear up Obamacare and replace it. Secretary Clinton, is it really fair to say that Bernie Sanders wants to kill Obamacare?
Well, Andrea, I am absolutely committed to universal health care. I've worked on this for a long time. People may remember that I took on the health insurance industry back in the 90s, and I didn't quit until we got the Children's Health Insurance Program that insures 8 million kids. And I certainly respect Senator Sanders' intentions, but when you're talking about health care, the details really matter, and therefore, we have been raising questions about the 9 bills that he introduced over 20 years as to how they would work and what would be the impact on people's health care. He didn't like that. His campaign didn't like it either, and tonight he's come out with a new health care plan. And again, we need to get into the details, but here's what I believe. The Democratic Party in the United States worked since Harry Truman to get the Affordable Care Act passed. We finally have a path to universal health care. We've accomplished so much already. I do not want to see the Republicans repeal it, and I don't want to see us start over again with a contentious debate.
And did Bernie has a response to that. Okay, so we'll keep going. So that's sort of the Hillary frame.
Secretary Clinton didn't answer your question. Because what her campaign was saying, Bernie Sanders, who has fought for universal health care for my entire
life. He wants to end Medicare and Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. That is nonsense. What a Medicare for All program does is finally provide in this country health care for every man, woman, and child as a right. We are paying the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, getting ripped off. And here's the important point. We are spending far more per person on health care than the people of any other country. My proposal, provide health care to all people, get private insurance out of health insurance, lower the cost of health care for middle-class families by $5,000. That's the vision we need to take.
So, Bridget, what's going on there? It seems like that, you know, Hillary is doing sort of two different things that and trying to square a circle in some respects. Because on one hand, it's this isn't practical, this isn't manageable. But then there's also some type of substantive problem with single payer, which I think is pretty, you know, in pretty significant contrast to most Democratic primary voters.
Totally. I totally agree. I think, well, one, I think that she's, I mean, I think it's, I think Sanders is right. I think that her kind of calling him out, saying that he's against sort of this, you know, overhaul of the healthcare system, I think is not accurate. I think that his campaign responded in like a really interesting way when he, I don't know if you saw that they produced like a photograph that Hillary Clinton had signed that said like, thank you for your tireless efforts to, you know, ensure that everybody has healthcare. To now go back and say that he hasn't done that, I think he's right, but like that's not entirely fair. But I think you're right. I think that she's trying to sort of square a circle in terms of her position on healthcare. And I do. I think, you know, certainly Hillary Clinton is someone who I would personally say has been advocating for, you know, healthcare for children for a very long time. But I don't feel very good about the way that she's attacking Bernie Sanders on healthcare in this way. I'm not a big fan of how she's sort of going about it.
Because do you think that what ends up happening with this is that in the context, this is a Democratic primary. So theoretically, we're trying to set a baseline here of what's politically possible and the best way to sort of make these arguments, you know, writ large for a real social safety net. It seems like one of the, you know, accusations and one of the realities of the Clintons is triangulation. And is she sort of providing the ammunition, even potentially against herself if she's president, and she pushes for some type of substantive expansion?
I mean, it certainly sounds that way. It's like, it sounds like she wants voters to think, like, oh, all these pie-in-the-sky ideas, it's not going to work. But sort of not realizing that, like, this is a conversation I think the majority of voters in the United States want to have around healthcare. I think that healthcare is too expensive. I think that I think the strategy that she's taking ultimately will not do herself any favors down the line, but also it's like not what necessarily I think voters want to hear.
So, and related to that, if she, you know, makes these arguments and she's tone deaf, you've said several times what the voters want to hear. The way Barack Obama surpassed Hillary Clinton in 2008 and 2007 was by, I think, it was less on policy grounds and more on a sort of, actually it was policy grounds more with foreign policy. That was real then. But it was this sort of notion that we need a tonal transformation. We need a different way of going about things. You need to sort of feel differently when your president's on TV in some respects. Like, we need a brand shift. And now it seems like we're in the era where, you know, whether it's manifested in a really toxic and demagogic way with Donald Trump, or in a, you know, really progressive and forward-looking way with Bernie Sanders, people want that shift again. But now it's much more in a sort of grounded policy way. And before, you know, I want you to respond to that, but I also think, you know, this leads into the second piece of sound that we'll play, which I also thought was a significant moment of the debate. They were, go ahead real quick, and then we'll play this sound. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think that the thing that made Barack Obama a really enticing candidate was, you know, this idea of, like, it's time for a change. We need somebody new. We need somebody different, new blood. I think that when you hear Hillary Clinton's policies, she makes it very clear that, like, this is not going to be that kind of, like, tonal shift from Barack Obama's administration. I think she makes it very, very clear. And I think that people want something new. And I think that really, I think that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are kind of two sides of the same coin in a kind of way, that they both represent sort of what you were talking about, this shift, this something new, whether it's to the, in my opinion, the like scary side or right. the more progressive side. People are sort of just sick of the same old thing.
Yeah. So, and I think this is also was shown in this other piece of sound, which I think was significant from the debate that kind of gets to this. Bernie Sanders, there was the question about Barack Obama speaking about, you know, the partisan divide and how one of the regrets of his presidency was he wasn't able to bridge it, which he spoke to in his State of the Union. Again, I think it's a little bit of a performative contradiction because on one hand, I think Obama has in a really positive and great way sort of at least owned that he wants to be a president of kind of real social transformation in the country, at least with regard to things like marriage equality and the rights of transgender people. And he also, called out for more for voting rights. And so it's like, you know, Republicans are not on board with that. So, you know, again, there's a lot of really practical reasons why you cannot have this sort of great bipartisan moment that he looked for. But the candidates were asked about what they would do to heal the divide. And, you know, and I think O'Malley and Hillary, they sort of, you know, they kind of threw a few crumbs in that direction. And Bernie Sanders kind of actually inverted it and talked about what the real problem in Washington is. And let's get that. I think this is sound number two.
A couple of years ago, when we understood that veterans were not getting the quality care they needed in a timely manner, I worked with folks like John McCain and others to pass the most comprehensive veterans health care legislation in modern history. But let me rephrase your question, because I think if, in all due respect, your expression, in all due respect, you're missing the main point. And the main point in the Congress is not that Republicans and Democrats hate each other. That's a mythology from the media. The real issue is that Congress is owned by big money and refuses to do what the American people want them to do. The real issue is that in area after area, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, the American people want it. Rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, creating 13 million jobs, the American people want it. Pay equity for women, the American people want it. Demanding that the wealthy start paying their fair share of taxes, the American people want it.
That's time.
Right. So it seems like what he's doing there is he's flipping it. He's actually saying, look, in some respects, particularly when it comes to things like Wall Street, when it comes to expanding Social Security, when it comes to making college free, when it comes to, you know, having no nonsense, actual universal health care, this country isn't actually that terribly divided. And in Congress, when it comes to doing favors for banks, isn't necessarily terribly divided. And then there's this kind of culturally manufactured game where we're divided on these issues sometimes that are very important and very vital, like marriage equality, but other times just kind of like cultural sideshows that distract from the really big problems, where sometimes, unfortunately, there's a big bipartisan consensus.
Totally. I mean, if there's one thing that I know from working in politics for quite a while, it's that I think that your everyday average citizen would be very, very surprised at all of the issues that there is, like, you know, bipartisan support for. That, like, most folks, like, common sense legislation, most folks can get behind. Most folks agree that, like, college is too expensive, that you shouldn't be, you know, going bankrupt trying to pay for school. Most people agree that you shouldn't be going bankrupt to pay for a medical crisis. Most folks agree that we have a problem with our criminal justice system that locks up way too many people, and it's in our private prison system that, like, does so at a poor cost, right? Like, most right. folks can agree on these massive things. But if you watch, you know, a lot of cable news, if you sort of get wrapped up in the sort of political theater, you would think that these things are sort of, that people have these, like, incredibly polemic feelings about them, when that's not the case. So I think that Bernie Sanders is right on this one. I think that, you know, this idea that we're so polarized and the sides hate each other, I think there's definitely some truth to that. So I think that I wouldn't discount that outright. But I think he's absolutely right that, like, the way that we handle, you know, the wealthy in this country, the way that we handle big banks in this country and Wall Street bankers, I think that most everyday citizens probably all kind of agree in a fundamental way on that. But you would never sort of believe that if you kind of got sucked up in the political theater that it's, you know, it's the fact that the right and the left hate each other and they won't reach across the aisle.
Right. This sort of this whole and then it becomes about all these kind of like amorphous things, leadership and, you know, President Obama didn't, you know, congratulate this guy's kid on doing well at a track meet. And, you know, all of a sudden that's why we have all of these big problems versus the actual sort of structural issues that drive the crisis. I want to get the same dynamic played out with regards to Wall Street reform. We'll play that exchange. And then I want to ask you before we wrap up, and we'll use this exchange to get into it, about is there a way that Hillary Clinton can maybe make her sort of argument that she's trying to make without indulging in these kind of Republican-like criticisms? Because I think ultimately it's not effective for her either. But let's listen to them go back and forth on Wall Street reform. What's happening here is you're seeing Hillary Clinton, and this is an audience in South Carolina. This debate was sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus Institute. They were co-sponsors of this debate. And she's trying to sort of use, really hug President Obama as tightly as possible to amplify the policy differences here. So let's listen to this exchange on Wall Street banks, and then we'll get into Hillary a bit more.
About the banks and what Secretary Clinton would do.
First difference is I don't take money from big banks. I don't get personal speaking fees from Goldman Sachs. What I would do is understand that when you have three out of the four largest banks today bigger than they were when we bailed them out because they were too big to fail, when you have the six largest financial institutions having assets of 60% of the GDP of America, it is very clear to me what you have to do. You got to bring back a 21st century Glass-Steagall legislation, and you got to break up these huge financial institutions. They have too much economic power, and they have too much financial power over our entire economy. If Teddy Roosevelt were alive today, the old Republican trust buster, what he would say is, these guys are too powerful, break them up. I believe that's what the American people want to see. That's my view.
Secretary Clinton, help the voter understand the daylight between the two of you here.
Well, there's no daylight on the basic premise that there should be no bank too big to fail and no individual too powerful to jail. We agree on that. But where we disagree is the comments that Senator Sanders has made that don't just affect me, I can take that. But he's criticized President Obama for taking donations from Wall Street.
I can just imagine Obama being there like, yeah, that's right, I can't take it. Hillary can, but I'm soft. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Street. And President Obama has led our country out of the Great Recession. Senator Sanders called him weak, disappointing. He even in 2011 publicly sought someone to run in a primary against President Obama. Now, I personally believe that President Obama's work to push through the Dodd-Frank bill.
I'm sorry, pause it one more time. To those who are just listening, Bernie Sanders gave a pretty epic eye roll, like he had just, taken a sour tasting health supplement or something. All right, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
To sign it was one of the most important regulatory schemes we've had since the 1930s. So I'm going to defend Dodd-Frank, and I'm going to defend President Obama for taking on Wall Street, taking on the financial industry, and getting results.
Senator Sanders, your response.
Set the record right. In 2006, when I ran for the Senate, Senator Barack Obama was kind enough to campaign for me. 2008, I did my best to see that he was elected. And in 2012, I worked as hard as I could to see that he was reelected. He and I are friends. We've worked together on many issues. We have some differences of opinion. But here is the issue. Secretary touched on it. Can you really reform Wall Street when they are spending millions and millions of dollars on campaign contributions and when they are providing speaker fees to individuals. So it's easy to say, well, I'm going to do this and do that. But I have doubts when people receive huge amounts of money from Wall Street.
So a lot's happening there, obviously. I guess first, do you think that that's sort of the play that she can make sort of independently, even of these arguments about pragmatism or electability, to just say that regardless of what President Obama's record has been, which I think is quite objectively a very centrist record, people are very fond of him personally in the Democratic Party. They're inspired by his leadership. And is that the sort of best path for her in terms of just, I'm the continuation in the sense that people want it, which is maybe more on a personality level than a policy level?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah, please.
I would say, one, I think you're exactly right, right? That, like, she's definitely trying to sort of, like, show, like, oh, my policies or my candidacy and my presidency would be a kind of continuation of the Obama era. But I also think, I think she's doing it for a reason that I totally understand. I think that, you know, I'm a Black woman. My parents are also Black Democrats.
Right.
My parents don't know much about politics, but the love they have for Barack Obama would, like, freak you out. They have a cardboard cutout of him in their living room, right? Like,
I sleep next to a cardboard cutout of Barack Obama, so I don't know what you all are talking about. No, I'm just kidding. Yes.
Exactly. No. Exactly.
I mean, I think that, like, that is not true. I do need to clarify that. Yeah. Yes.
I think that Black voters especially really, really love Barack Obama. And I think that, you know, it's not going to, I mean, both Sanders and Clinton know that trashing Obama is not going to be a savvy campaign move for either of them. I think that, you know, certainly I totally agree that his record's been very centrist. And I think that when it comes to Wall Street and reigning in Wall Street, I think that anyone who's paying attention could make an argument that, like, no, he has not gone far enough and he has not done enough to, you know, protect the average everyday citizen over kind of a Wall Street banker. I think that that's a totally legit argument to make. But I also think that, you know, I don't know that I get why she's doing this, but I don't know that it's going to serve her well from a campaign strategy standpoint. I think that, you know, she's sort of taking this role of, like, defending President Obama's legacy and his policy decisions and what he's done, which I think plays very well. But I think when you break down kind of, like, that as a strategy, I have a lot of questions about it.
Go more into those questions, and I have a final question for you very much in your mode as a campaign strategist. But why do you think that that's not necessarily going to be effective for her?
Well, because I think that I think if Sanders were being more on the defensive, he could tear that apart in a minute, but he doesn't want to come off as seeming like attacking Barack Obama. So I think that, like, as the campaign goes forward, if he so chooses to sort of pick apart her legacy with Wall Street, you know, I think that most people, you know, the amount of fees that she gets it's a lot. I mean, I'm certainly someone who, like, if you're giving a talk, making money is not, you know, the end of the world. But I think that a lot of voters give a lot of voters pause. And I think it's totally fair for Sanders to question whether or not she really has the ability to sort of rein in these big banks if it seems like she's so buddy-buddy with them. I remember in a previous debate where she was asked about her donations, and what the question was, like, how do you plan to rein in Wall Street when so many Wall Street bankers have given you money? And rather than sort of answering that question, she totally flipped it and said, like, oh, well, I was, you know, a lawmaker in New York during 9/11, and so that's how I make sense of getting money from Wall Street. But it's like, I think that most people see that as a sidestep. I think that most people see the way that she kind of maneuvers around what I think are very, very sort of, like, thoughtful questions and sort of, like, you know, questions that people want answered. I think that she can only do this for so long until she has to come up with a more straightforward response for her specific understanding of her own relationship with Wall Street and how that will carry out if she becomes president.
And how that will play out in a general election against somebody like, you know, Donald Trump, who might actually be able. I mean, it's nonsensical. He's a, you know, he's a trust fund plutocrat, but he knows how to talk that language. And I think that, you know, that's something that will continue. if she's the nominee without any doubt. As a final question, I'm just curious because I respect your strategic mind a lot. If you had to give advice in sort of, you know, basic summary for Bernie Sanders and for Hillary Clinton moving forward, this race is getting, you know, a lot more real. Clearly, at the very least, Iowa and New Hampshire are very competitive. And if Bernie Sanders wins either or both of those states, then it's still an incredibly uphill battle for him, if we're being real. But it changes the entire dynamic of this primary. What, if you were advising both of them, would you be saying that they both need to do over the next couple of weeks as we get into people actually voting?
That is such a great question. I would say, I mean, and I'll preface this by saying that, like, I like both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So I'm not, like, you know, I think they're both very interesting, and I like them both. I would say for Sanders, mm-hmm. I think that for a lot of folks, he can come off as a little bit tone deaf, and I don't think this is something that he is kind of doing anything to challenge. I think that, you know, I think that he seems like someone who comes off as sort of like no nonsense in a kind of way. The way that he deals with the media and the way that he's dealt with, like, you know, when he was, you know, protested by Black Lives Matter at Netroots Nation in Arizona earlier last year, I think, like, he can come off as someone who, you know, is very no nonsense and, you know, is not going to sort of put up with any kind of anything that he does not necessarily kind of like want to put up with. But I think when you're running for president, you kind of have to do that. And so I certainly don't think that he should be, you know, making a mockery of his race. But I think he could come off with a little bit more, just a little less tone deaf. You know, people want to know that when they're, you know, someone's going to be president, that they're going to have a cool head, they're going to be very thoughtful, they're going to think things through and be very pragmatic. And I think that he is a very pragmatic person, but I think that his behavior can come off as a little bit gruff. I don't know that he is aware of how that translates to voters. Voters don't want someone who comes off as very, like, flappable and very, like, you know, kind of easily has their feathers ruffled. Voters want someone who's got a little bit more of a cool, calm head. And I think that he has that in him, but I don't think that voters are seeing it.
Okay, and Hillary Clinton, right before we wrap up, what's the tight advice for her?
Tight advice for her is don't get too bogged down in sort of cute, clever campaign tricks, right? Like, nobody cares if you whip or nay-nay. Respond in
Matt in the office does. He actually flipped his vote for her after he saw her do that. It was weird. So maybe there is a constituency for this. Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be my advice.
Okay. So with Bernie, be a little bit less gruff. With Hillary, stop doing. It's almost like every time you see Hillary on Ellen or something, and I don't even like really watch, like I'll see them clipped somewhere, and it's always like she has this look on her face, like, okay, I got the nay-nay. I dropped the Drake reference. Can I just be your president now, please? Thank you.
Exactly.
It does not come off like she's really enjoying herself, and it's totally understandable why she wouldn't. Bridget Todd, political strategist, writer. Thank you so much for joining me and breaking this debate down for everybody. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, be well. All right, everybody. We are going to get to the fun half where you can join me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We still have a lot more sound. We've got some stories from the Middle East. The IMs are open. In obviously, you should become a member of the Majority Report today. Everybody that becomes a member is really happy about it. People are not ever like, yeah, nah, nah, nah. They love it. That's almost always in an email where someone says, I finally became a member, and they have almost like a sense of accomplishment about it. And there is something pretty amazing about the reality that you personally make something happen. I mean, there's other mediums and a lot of other places that, I mean, obviously there's shows that are similar to this that really rely on direct relationships with listeners and viewers. But even something like NPR, which, you know, is great. And I think if you listen to NPR and you benefit from NPR, you should, you know, help them out too if you can. But, you know, there's a lot of other things going on. There's grant money. There's this, there's that. We have advertisers. We're building out other things. But fundamentally, the very overwhelming baseline is your support. And that's how this thing happens. So if you can become a member, you benefit from the show, you enjoy the show, please do it today at majority.fm/become a member. It's less than a cup of coffee a day, and you know how much content we give you, and in fact, more content is coming. If you are a member of the show, go into iTunes, go to the Majority Report on iTunes, click subscribe. It won't in any way interfere with your members' feed, but it will help our iTunes numbers. We'll get more downloads. That gets us in front of more eyeballs. That's great for us. Write us a review on iTunes. You know, it could be sometimes people write long, in-depth paragraphs. Sometimes people write, you know, two sentences, say, hey, it's a great show, whatever. Whatever you can do is also helpful. We have Majority Kickback. Is it Majority? Is MajorityKickback.com?
I think so.
Can somebody, just double check that for me? I think it's MajorityKickback.com. And the point is that, you know, as you know, if you stick with Amazon, if you use our link, yeah.
MajorityReportKickback.com.
MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. Amazon. If you use Amazon, use our link. We get a little tiny cut from that. It makes no difference on your final price. And now we've got Jet.com, which I'm really excited about. It's basically Amazon with a social conscience. And I've been looking at that site. It's easy to use. It's got also amazing deals. There's no, you know, it's great. And you can also know that they've given us a really early, you know, affiliate deal or a deal where, you know, same situation with Amazon, that if you use that link, we get a bit of that. And this is a company that treats its workers really, really well, and is showing that, you know, apparently you can run you know, a fast turnaround, sort of straight to the door company with ethics and with respect for labor. So that's awesome. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Just coffee, fair trade tea, coffee, chocolate. Get the Majority Report blend. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's YouTube/Sam Cedar. Like us on Facebook. We post things there. That's the Majority Report on Facebook. Follow us at majority.fm on Twitter. Join us in the second half of the show, 646-257-3920. The IMs are already on. We will see you on the flip side. And for non-members out there, have a great day, everybody. I hope you are enjoying listening to this wherever you are.